You're listening to The Startup with Monique Leray, only on LA Talk Radio.
How's it going, Los Angeles? This is The Startup with Monique Leray. I'm Monique Leray. I'm back with a fresh new episode. Episode 214, I believe. I have to double check my marker, but I'm really happy to be joined by a friend and a colleague and someone who was here last year. But before we bring him on, quick recap, lots going on around here. We are launched on Vimeo. Very happy about that. The Pandemic Project documentary is now available on Vimeo. So you guys, if you check us out, you can check us out on Instagram at the Pandemic Project documentary, or you could actually go to our website. We're putting that up there, the link, or our YouTube channel here. So we'll be posting that today. And I'm really excited to be here giving you that update. It's a long labor of love. And then the second film's trailer will be dropped very soon, which is the international version. So lots of updates. Oscars week is coming up, and there's a lot of exciting things. So I'm very excited. And you know what? Let's do it like this too, guys. If you want to scan that QR code and stream it today, grab your popcorn, you can. But it'll be posted here on our YouTube link and on our Instagram, as well as Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter X. I have some new swag on today, and I have the author of this fantastic, adventurous, nutritious, educational, futuristic, if you will, comic book series called The Sorgo Squad. And here to discuss it is our friend. Welcome back to the show, Nate Bloom, CEO of Sorghum United Foundation and Sorgo Squad author. How's it going?
Miss Simpson, I'm doing, or Miss Leray, I'm sorry, I'm doing so great. Thank you again for having me on. Listen, thanks again for everything you do. And before we get started, I just want to speak to your listeners a moment, especially in particular, everyone who's been affected by the devastating fires in the Los Angeles area. You know, our hearts go out to you. It might be located here in Nebraska, but just know the rest of the country is behind you. This is a very difficult time for many, and I hope things are going well, and maybe our conversation can be a bit of a bright spot in what's otherwise a challenging time. So thanks again, you know, for what you do, and thanks for having me on again.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for your sentiments as well. Yes, I think that we are on the mend. A lot of people are resilient here. It's going to be a long haul, but, you know, change makers and pioneers like yourself, from hearing that from you, you could be from anywhere. The well wishes are well received, and we appreciate it. So guys, just out of transparency here and some context, Nate was on my show last year towards the end of the summer, I believe, and we found some synergy and began working together. And so if you follow my posts on Cap Aquarius Media in my business page, you'll see that I've been traveling and helping to build his brand. And he's put me in charge of marketing and media, which is a huge honor. This is his brainchild that he's traveled many miles around the world and spent lots of time and dollars and energy, blood, sweat, and tears to scale these brands. I would really love to go full screen, Nate, and let's have an origin story here at the startup. We really like to know, if you could recap us, where the idea came from to start Sorghum United Foundation and write these books for Sorgo Squad, and how did you find the inspiration to move it along to where it is today? So we'll go full screen here.
Yeah, that's good. Well, so this is a common question, which is where did Sorghum United start? We've come a long way since we started, so it's nice to go back every now and again and say, okay, well, how did we start? So the reality is, a few years ago, I was the executive director of a state agency in Nebraska, state of Nebraska, working for sorghum farmers. And at the time that I took the position, I didn't know very much about sorghum. I just knew it was something that we had grown on our farm growing up, when I was growing up, but I didn't know very much about it. And so through my work, working on behalf of the sorghum farmers, I learned more about what sorghum was, which is, by the way, a major millet, an ancient grain. One that is highly nutritive, exceptionally drought resistant, and fits a lot of the boxes when we talk about challenging climate changes around the world and food security and nutrition. And I really fell in love with the grain through that. And through my work, we slowly started building an international coalition, which eventually did become Sorghum United. It started just as a group of people who understood that what we were doing was good, and they wanted to be a part of it. And eventually, we became a full-fledged group, and that began with the International Year of Millets that kicked off at the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization in 2023. So we've been a full-blown organization for now 2 years, just over 2 years. We've grown from just a couple of ideas and loose networking into now a global organization that is literally on the ground working with thousands of farmers and thousands of people within the value chain for sorghum and millets, which are other small ancient grains that are highly nutritive and extremely drought tolerant. We have offices in India, in Nairobi, in the Caribbean, New York, Laguna Beach there with Monique, who is our Vice President of Media and Marketing. Now, we have folks in the Philippines, and the list just goes on and on and on. And we're also doing projects all over the continent of Africa, Southeast Asia, I should say, in the Pacific, and potentially here coming up in South America, as well as in the MENA region, in Qatar and places like the UAE. So we're really excited with the growth. And it's really fun to see when not so much a good idea, because I don't want to be the guy that just says, "Hey, man, it's really gratifying to see an idea come to fruition," because that's not really what it's about. It's not about what I do. It's about the work that we're doing. And again, being able to go and visit villages on the ground that are creating food, growing food, but are still dependent upon food aid because they don't understand necessarily, they haven't been taught how to do value addition or how to properly market their food or all the other challenges. Or maybe they're in a place where they're trying to grow maize or rice where the climate no longer allows for that to happen. So to be able to see the change that we can actually make through emboldening and empowering these individuals and local organizations is really, really huge. Now, you asked also about the Sorgho Squad books and where that idea came up. Well, the reality is that most people don't know what sorghum and millets are. And quite frankly, why would they? It's not, our diet globally is really dependent upon five major grains, your corn, wheat, rice, soy. I'll put sugar in there, even though it's not a grain. But these are the things that really drive our diets on a global level within our food systems. And so consumers can't request a product if they don't know it exists. We also know that once you just start talking about agriculture, most people outside of agriculture tune out and they say, "Why should I care about this? I'm not in agriculture." So the books were intended to be a fun Captain Planet meets Indiana Jones type storyline where people could understand not only the importance of these grains, but maybe some of the brokenness within our global food system, right? Like, why aren't farmers growing these grains, right? Well, they're not growing the grains because people aren't demanding the grains, right? So helping people to understand what those systemic challenges are is, I think, the first step from a grassroots standpoint, which is what we hope to do, to changing those systems.
That's really, really great to give that overview, Nate. And I like that you are saying essentially all of us are invested in agriculture, because that's where our food comes from, quite frankly. I mean, unless you eat, it's just completely, you don't eat anything from the earth and your diet is less than healthy, it's going to affect you somewhere. And it touches all points. We're all original investors in agriculture, right? Or what was, I think you said something the other day that was really great. We're all original supporters of agriculture or connoisseurs, or you said something like that, right?
Well, and it goes beyond even that. I mean, we can talk about the nutrition piece and we can talk about the things that are in the grocery store that look like food but aren't really food, that don't have the nutritional value. And we can talk about the need to replace those with healthier alternatives, healthier formulations maybe for products that we're already familiar with that use these grains. We could talk about the climate challenges, which we all face. I mean, we all live on this same spinning blue orb that goes around our small white sun. Small white star, right? So we could talk about those challenges, but let's think about it from a societal standpoint, right? So in places where we see, say, radicalization, or we see poverty. We see human trafficking. We see crime, right? We see all these societal challenges. The common denominator in many of these places is that they are food dependent, right? They're food dependent, which also means that their adjacent industries, or I should say industries adjacent to agriculture, which create jobs, which can create jobs, which here in the US create jobs, or in Europe create jobs, right? Your food processing, your input providing, your fabrication for small scale mechanization, right? Your banking, your lending, all of these jobs that we don't think of as being agriculture, but are actually very much dependent upon growing food for them to be successful and viable. All these go away once that food production goes away. So what's different about what we're trying to do is at the Sorghum United Foundation, which we are happy to say, last time I spoke to you, we weren't a foundation, but now we finally are. Yay.
501 in the house.
Yep, we're 501c3. And one thing that really helps us to stand out is not only that we work with local partners so that we fully understand what the local problems are, rather than just going someplace and bringing a solution maybe to a problem that we don't fully understand. Wow. But the other side of it is we're not just going in and giving people food. We're not just going in and saying, hey, here's how you grow the grain. We're going in and saying, hey, here's how you grow the grain, but let's bring in those ancillary industries or those people who can fill the roles for those ancillary industries, and let's strengthen and embolden the entire supply chain. So not only are you growing the food, but maybe you're now, because you're working with local banks, you're getting the financing that you need. You're working with local input providers so you can get the adequate seed and the adequate chemicals and fertilizer and whatever it is that you want. We're working with local fabricators so that they can learn how to make equipment rather than being reliant upon equipment being imported in, which, by the way, is how it works now. And when that equipment breaks, nobody knows how to fix it. And then things are worse than they were before. So teaching them how to create their own equipment using engineering that we're providing, okay, is important, because then they can create jobs, they can have new markets for them. And then also the food processing and creating an actual product rather than just a raw grain that goes to the market often at an undervalued appreciation. We're talking about creating systemic change for local food systems globally that can create generational wealth and opportunities for education, decrease in crime rates, decrease in human trafficking, and general prosperity. This represents that basic, if your listeners are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that basic bottom foundation of Maslow's pyramid, which is access to food, water, and shelter, what people need to be prosperous. We're teaching people, reteaching people, empowering entire communities to do just that. And I think it's a long game, but it's one that I'm willing to spend the rest of my life playing.
You know, it's really interesting how you are going after a legacy piece, not for your own ego. I don't get that from you at all, but you're going after a legacy piece that will set people up for so many generations ahead and hopefully help the environment in the process. I mean, we were just speaking at the top of the show about the fires here. There's cause and effect for everything. And, you know, we're not untouched by what the environment is doing and what we've done to it. So it sounds like if people could get the basic knowledge about how magical, truly magical, this ancient grain is, and what you're attempting to do, and what you will do, I think people can get excited. And we're here to make it sexy, right? Because you know it's a grain, you know. And if you're excited about any of those things that Nate has talked about and touched on, or you care about any of those things, that I think that we should care about those things. But you know, if you don't, or it's not really your thing, and you've never tried sorghum, by the way, when it's popped, it's delicious. I think that you could get on board with some other things that you're doing, including Sorgo Squad. We brought these comic book characters to life. If you scan that QR code right there, you can check them out and grab your set on Amazon. And Nate, talk to me about this way to teach people and have a good time while doing it. I mean, how did you get these concepts? What's the background behind the names? And how long did it take you to complete the first set?
Yeah, so we've published three chapters in the Sorgho Squad series. It's essentially a serial, right? So like a comic book series is a serial. So we've actually written the next three already. They're just not published yet. So the little shout out. The more books your viewers buy, the sooner we'll publish the next three.
I think that's how that works,
Yeah.
folks. Let's support this.
But one thing, so I mentioned earlier that sorghum is an ancient grain and millets are ancient grains. And what that means is that we've been growing them since the dawn of human civilization in places like West Africa, so what's now Nigeria, in East Africa and Ethiopia and Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq, and Iran, and also in India. And since these are cradles of human civilization and these grains have been around for the entirety of human civilization, they've necessarily gained local nomenclatures for the grains. This has actually created a bit of a challenge when we talk about sorghum on the international stage, because if I say sorghum in a place where they call it Mashila, they don't know what I'm talking about. So what we wanted to do with these characters was show people through their names that these are all the same grains. So we have Jowar, who obviously is, well, not obviously, but he's the common nomenclature for India, and Jowar represents the industrial applications for sorghum. Mashila is from Ethiopia, East Africa, and she represents the health and nutrition benefits of sorghum. And then Milo, which is what we call it here in the U.S., so that's the land race of sorghum in the U.S. That character is named Milo, and he represents the environmental benefits of sorghum. Even the name Sorgho is what they call it in Europe. So even there, we bring our European friends in. In the next three books, we introduce other millets like foxtail, proso, and finger millets. There's actually a dozen varieties of these grains, and that's really where they've come from. But maybe we should talk a little bit actually about how sorghum is used.
Yeah, was this you? We're right on the same track there, because I was going to ask you how folks should venture to try it and how they should apply it into their diet. So yeah, let's go full screen and give Nate this segment here.
Yeah, so many of your viewers will be able to find sorghum in the health food section, maybe at their local grocery store or at a Whole Foods or a health food store type like that. Even though the US grows the majority of sorghum in the world, most of our sorghum goes out very inexpensively to China, where they make something called baijiu, which is kind of a whiskey style drink made with sorghum. But if you are able to find some here, it's most likely imported from India through a company called Bob's Red Mill. They're the largest distributor here in the US. And if you buy it, you like at our house, we use it just like rice, right? So it's 3 cups of water to 1 cup of sorghum. If you have a pressure cooker, it's about 20, 25 minutes in the pressure cooker. It does have a higher cook time on the stovetop, which is a bummer. Typically I'll just cook a bunch of it, freeze what I don't use, and then it's easy to warm up and just reuse. It's gluten-free, it's non-GMO. Anything you use any other grain for, you can use these for. So you can pop it, you can flake it, you can use it in a flour. There's nothing stopping you from using it as though you use any other grain. And one of the common questions I get is, well, what are the special recipes for sorghum? And the answer is that there's not a special recipe. I mean, there's plenty. You can go out there on the internet and you can find all sorts of special recipes. But the reality is that we don't do anything special when we're cooking with our sorghum. We just use often regular, say, wheat-based recipes, and just substitute the wheat for the sorghum. Same with rice. So it's really very easy to use. We don't need to make it harder than it already is.
That's really great to break that down. And I know we were discussing this the other day with the team to kind of tell the story and how to approach it. And your VP of the whole organization, Monia, so lovely and eloquently, you could tell she's really invested in and very passionate about the uses and the movement around sorghum and millets. And so I love that storytelling is going to be something that we can see in the future with the brand. And also we're adding a little Hollywood zhuzh to it, right? So we've got a few things we're dropping this month that I'm excited. We're not gonna spoil it yet. I mean, we announced a little on social media, but let's talk a little bit about what your foundation is aiming to do in the celebrity space, Blue Milo and Sorgho Squad.
Yeah, let's talk about those. things. And just one quick thing. So we did have a strategy call the other day, and for all the good things we've talked about what sorghum does, one of the challenges we have, I just want to hit on this and then we'll get to your question. One of the challenges we have is that it does so much. So as we were talking with our foundation strategy team, we were saying, well, gosh, you know, for health and nutrition, environment, biodiversity, you know, water conservation, climate change, all these things that these grains do, they almost become like a laundry list. And it's almost like it's overwhelming if you're talking to the average person who maybe the average person cares only about climate. Maybe they only care about health. And here, we don't even know where to start talking to them because there's so much that it does, and it can alienate them. So part of our challenge actually with our foundation, which is a good challenge, is developing you know, packets that are pertinent to individuals who are interested in certain different things. So that's one thing, and I'll use that to lead into what we're doing next with our foundation. We are looking at getting into the animation. We're looking for additional distribution for the books. We have a video game in development as well. And we know that one way to do that is to work with existing influencers who are concerned with all the things that we've just talked about. So here in the next, what, week and a half, Monique, we'll be part of the gifting suite, one of the gifting suites for the Oscars. I'll be in Los Angeles. I'm actually coming from an event in Dubai just for that. So kind of a whirlwind around the world type thing. But we're eager to meet the people in particular who live in your area, or in particular who work in the entertainment industry, who are keen to help make a difference and maybe use the platform that their success has given them to help, just like we're trying to do, make the world a better place.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, nobody in our organization is selfish in this. Everyone is pulling their weight. Everybody is making sacrifices, myself included. I've not taken a paycheck in 2 years.
Yes.
In fact, this whole thing has been invested up until now by me. So we're looking for people like us who are willing to go out and just do what they can, leverage the gifts they're given, and help us make the world a better place, not just for our planet, but for the people who live on it.
You know, I think that it really brings up the long-term investment in this thing. And if we can find those people that are like-minded and see if we can, you know, attach them to the program, I think that that's going to be something really beautiful and valuable. Now, I want to say, guys, in the film, if you can stream it on Vimeo now, you'll see Nate's lovely face, as well as another beautiful brand called BIMS, a Black and Marine Scientist, which I'm going to connect you to, Nate, because there's some synergy there. And you actually have been invited to take a dive with them when you're in the Caribbean. You don't know that yet. But anyway, surprise, surprise. If you guys stream, you will see Nate in the field speaking about the challenges during the pandemic. And, you know, as a entrepreneur who hasn't taken a check and who's just been pouring it out and pouring your time, your blood, sweat, and tears, and your dollars, let's talk to that entrepreneur that feels stuck, right? That you've been able to scale your business in the infrastructure phase. And now with the foundation and the other income streams that you're identifying, you'll be able to finally pull some income in there. But let's speak to that entrepreneur that gets depressed, the walls start closing in on them. They feel like they don't get the support from their friends and family that they need to keep going, but they've got that grit. But what would you speak, and how would we help our startup friends and family? Let's go full screen.
Yeah. Hey, listen, first of all, the thing I would tell the entrepreneur who is experiencing that is we've all been there. We've all been there. And if you haven't experienced it, at least once a week, you know, maybe you're not fully invested. So it's real. The challenge is real. And, you know, the challenge whenever we have a vision for creating something new is difficult because, you know, people like to, they like to get behind what they can see, feel, and touch. And vision is not always that. So getting through that development phase, that infrastructure phase, like you called it, is really important. What has helped me get through it, and I remember early on, I would use the analogy of Sisyphus. And if your viewers are familiar with their Greek mythology, which I'm sure everyone's done their homework, and they are, Sisyphus was a Greek god who, or a Greek king, I'm sorry, a Greek king, who was who angered the gods, short story, angered the gods, and was punished by perpetually rolling a boulder uphill in Hades. That's his eternal punishment, is rolling a boulder uphill. And as an entrepreneur, we often feel like Sisyphus rolling this boulder. But if we put ourselves in the shoes of Sisyphus, we understand there's only two things he could know. I take that back. Sorry. There's one thing he can know, and there's one thing he can't know. He can't know how close he is to having a bit of a reprieve. He can't know where he might be in relation to maybe the next plateau or somewhere he can take a little break. What he does know is that the moment he lets go of that boulder, it rolls downhill and he has to start all over. So as an entrepreneur, you have to just wake up every day and realize that, hey, if I stop pushing, I've got to start from the beginning. I don't know how close I am to getting that big break, but I do know that if I stop pushing, I've got a problem. And with that mentality, what I've found is that over the course of the growth of our organization, we're still Sisyphus, but now I can say we are Sisyphus. I'm not the only one rolling the boulder. I've got people on my team who are helping to roll that boulder. I know that if I have a day where I need to take my hands off the steering wheel, the vehicle is still going in the direction it needs to go. So that's the best advice I can give. Be introspective, but also be persistent. Be willing to accept the fact that maybe your ideas aren't the best and need to be developed better, but also have the confidence to stand behind your ideas and keep pushing, and the flexibility to accept advice and challenge in order to make those ideas better. These are what's really important, I think, for any entrepreneur, regardless of the field you're in.
That's really, really great, a great story to draw from, and really look at history and in where you are in your moment in your entrepreneur journey. And I really love that boulder analogy because I've had multiple boulders, as I know you have. I've had, and I think that's why we really connected, me doing this film all on my own around the world in a global pandemic with no conglomerate behind me. And literally those boulders were coming at me every single day. And it still is going in a different way. I still have to get it all the way up, but it's at least it's, I have some reprieve here and we just have to get it all the way to the top. But I really love that analogy, that story, that example. And yes, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're in that startup phase, if you're in that medium scale, startup to medium scale phase, or if you're already fully launched and equitable and you're making money and you're paying yourself and everybody's getting healthcare and you're doing great, I would challenge you to meet these young entrepreneurs, these brands with these beautiful ideas for the greater good, and see how you can lean in and help. Even if you can just donate your time to mentor. Your time and experience is a commodity. Your time and experience and your expertise, just like what Nate has offered, is of value. All you gotta do is listen. And I always say, Nate, take what works and leave the rest. And that, like you said, you have to be flexible. Some things might not work for you, but they might work for the next person. And you just have to find those shiny lights in the darkness, right? I remember there, I was leaving one time for the film, and I probably had 400 bucks, 200, 400 bucks in my account. And I'm literally doing deals in the airport. And I'm thinking, I am so crazy. Like, I didn't see the whole way I was going to do this. I just knew I was going to do it. And I wasn't taking no. And I was going to find my tribe. And you really do attract who you need along the way. I'm really grateful to see you here today. And I see that you're managing so many things, but you do it with ease. You got family and phone calls, and you're blowing up. Last question.
Yeah, I'm glad you appreciate the juggling. Yeah,
No.
I had a call come through from one of our folks in Africa, actually. And then, yeah, I'm at the in-laws' house, and I've had people come in and out, unfortunately. So, but no, that's good. Thank you.
Yeah, well, last plug here, guys. Nate will be back. We'll have him back as we grow and learn. But go ahead and use this code today. Scan and get a collection. Listen, it's not too late. to give your loved one for belated Valentine's, Galentine's, whatever you want to do, or an early Easter gift for the kids. Nate, thank you for being here. I can't wait to see you soon. Travel safe.
Thanks. And just a couple of plugs again, if people want to see what it is that we're doing. You can follow us at sorghumunited.com, also sorghosquad.com. There's a merchandise store as well. Also, follow us on the socials. We're on the Instagram. We're on the Instagram. It's like I'm 87 years old. No, we're on Instagram, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wherever the cool kids hang out, that's where we are. So please feel free to follow us. And if you'd like to support our foundation, there's an easy donate button at the top of our sorghumunited.com website as well. So, Ms. Luray, thank you so much. And it's an absolute pleasure working with you. And it's great to be on your show again. Thank you.
Thanks. And that's right. I want to just back it up at Sorgho Squad, at Sorghum United. And what will you start up today? Be well, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks. You're listening to The Startup with Monique Luray, only on LA Talk Radio.